Good morning. It's Dr. Alejandro Badia for another episode, bi-weekly episode of Fixing Healthcare from the Trenches. Joining us here on this rainy Thursday morning. As you can see, we're here at the jungle. For those who don't know what the jungle is, you can write me offline and I'll explain what that is. I'm very honored.
Wow. Thank you very much.
Very honored to welcome a very different podcast. We're going to be looking at two different sort of healthcare scenarios. Dr. Chad Deal is a is an aesthetic plastic surgeon, very renowned, very academic, who grew up all over the place, was a military brat, right?
I was.
And then most of his education was in Alabama, go UAB, right? And then he did a plastics fellowship at a Baptist in Birmingham, and then did an aesthetic surgery fellowship in Vegas. He's been in practice about 15 years. It's called Southern Surgical
Arts.
So welcome, Chad, to Fixing Healthcare from the Trenches.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I will tell you guys, it looks beautiful through here. It is a little bit rainy, but it's wonderful to be here. I think, you know, my perspective might be interesting to a lot of people out there because, you know, I've never taken 14 years doing this. I've never taken a single bit of insurance.
Right.
Which was my plan from the beginning because I really loved aesthetics. Actually, I really focused on cosmetics. I did general surgery background really at all through UAB Medical School and residency, and actually did an aesthetics fellowship, cosmetic fellowship in Las Vegas. And since then, I've been solely focused on really just providing a great product direct to consumer. It's very affordable surgery when you consider how much surgery would normally cost for 4 to 5 hours in the hospital.
Yeah.
And if that model could be replicated that we have, or people like us have, then all of a sudden you'd be amazed how affordable healthcare could be.
Exactly.
Which kind of gets me to my point.
Right. And that's exactly that's why we have these synergies, because certainly in hand surgery, there's a significant element of plastic surgery. In fact, during Dr. Deal's residency, you did
at least six months of hand.
And then, I have the same model that I am not dependent at all. In fact, I haven't been to a hospital in 12 years, and I am not knocking hospitals. All right. I mean, you need a bypass surgery,
sure,
or you are very ill and you need to be in the ICU, need that expertise, you need that equipment, you need that type of nursing care. Absolutely. But I think our healthcare system and others around the world have become way too dependent. People, I tell them what I do, and they immediately say, what hospital?
Sure.
You probably heard that too.
Sure.
Even as an aesthetic surgeon.
Yeah. You know,
what hospital?
Exactly.
Why a hospital?
When I try to tell people for instance, they'll talk about overseas. Why is it so affordable overseas? And I think because, there's so many things, but we are such a regulation nation.
Yeah.
And when you look at the people that actually diagnose, treat disease, the people that actually diagnose and treat you, from the nurse to the nurse practitioners, the PAs, the doctors, MDs, DOs alike, those are the people that actually save your life or they make you feel well. And then you have the patient, they have you. In the US, in between the provider and between the patient, there are so many people on the take. Now, I agree with you. There are people in the hospital system, like you were saying, that you do need. Somebody's got to buy the multi-million dollar MRIs, and someone's got to do that in one individual practice.
Run it, but yeah.
I agree. But if you look over time, there's graphs out there, and you see the size of the clinical staff that actually saves your life and the size of the administrative staff.
Well, it's a 6% increase in physicians. The last, the last graph I've seen was in the last 20 years, 6%. And an 1,800% increase in administrators.
Yeah, and so everyone thinks, okay, that's the problem. Actually, that's just the beginning of the problem. So you have, you know, administrators and vice presidents, and you got board directors, and they all have secretaries, and their secretaries have secretaries, and there's committees for this and committees for that. It is a regulation nation, which a lot of it is forced on them by government. And it just is absolutely redundant. I mean, this is one of the things that would blow a lot of people's minds in medicine. There are people that literally will go into charts just to find billing that you've done that was inappropriate, even though you did it honestly, to down-regulate your billing. In other words, to be able to charge less. Their entire job is just to find ways to save the insurance company money, even though the patient's life was saved, even though the hospital and the doctor spent all that time and money. They go through charts and go, oh, wait a minute. You didn't say anything about their eyeballs. Now you were there treating a carpal tunnel, or I was there treating some other wound, but I didn't talk about how their eyes looked in the chart.
But you have the opposite too, where it's a whole cottage industry with all these EMRs that now there are people who do, you know, they're what they call them, scrubbers, right? They look at your billing to do the opposite, to make sure you're getting paid. Why not? Let's just simplify it. I mean, you do this procedure, you diagnose this problem. So this is, you know, what we need to move to. And I think there is a bit of traction. Yeah. The problem is, if you look at, for example, what you do, right, in terms of aesthetic surgery, the public engages so much with that. Mm-hmm. And I understand, right? We all want to look good and all, but I think the public has to start realizing that the whole healthcare paradigm is important. And you know what? They're going to have to pay a little bit, maybe, for healthcare. See, the problem is people are willing to come to you, right, and pay.
They are.
For and yet, if they're having, you know, pain, or they're having shortness of breath, or their shoulder is, in my case, their shoulder is stiff and they have trouble going to the gym or doing work, they're not willing to come out of pocket a bit.
That's because they
realize. So it's a completely different paradigm.
They don't realize they've already come out of pocket in the form of their taxes and their job.
And the insurance. And they think the insurance company is going to take care of them.
Right. And what happens
is insurance.
You've mostly paid. So if you look at the people that are actually wealthy, where all your money is going to, who are the ones flying private jets? Well, all these insurance companies and rejects, they've got private jets. Yeah. You've got lawyers that are both suing you and protecting you. These are all the people on the take. You've got all that administration. You got the government. In other words, you have all these people in between the doctor that just diagnosed you and cured you and you. And in between, all these people are on the take, and they want it that way. They want it that way.
Yeah.
They want it to be confusing. And that's why I said, if someone said to me, what is the single biggest problem? Find a way to shrink that gap. In fact, I think most common colds, urinary tract infections, a lot of the common things people see that people end up going to the ER for, sore tooth. I don't know if you ever did ER shifts.
Yeah, I was an ER doctor, actually.
To make a little extra money.
How many
people show up with just headache, toothache?
Oh, and it was a VA hospital, so they show up at 4 a.m.
Yeah, right.
Thank God the nurses protected me because I had to make rounds in orthopedics at Bellevue at 6:30. But they would not wake me up for that because they shouldn't. And that is inappropriate use. That's why most of us in the trenches don't like the idea really of a single payer system, because it will, that you see that in the VA hospital.
Yeah.
People showing up at 4 a.m. with what you just said.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't cost them anything.
Right. If people knew that, wait a minute, just like McDonald's, let's go through. Yeah. If I've got a toothache that I've let go and I'm going to have to go in, and by the way, I would open up a lot of access, give a lot more powers for a lot of simple things to nurse practitioners.
Absolutely.
So
when a lot of mid-level colleagues,
you drive in, you got a toothache, they're going to treat you. It's going to cost.
Well, that's how our ortho now is run that way. I mean, you don't need to see me for shoulder pain when you may simply have a bicep tendonitis or they can treat that, and they're probably better than I am at injecting.
Absolutely.
Right. So they can order therapy, and then with surgical, then they come to somebody like myself for that. Or if it's something plastics, they go to you.
But all
these other people can minimize the cost in the system.
And along those same lines, it is so ridiculous. I don't think a lot of people know this. If we want to literally cross the state and be able to treat people with our expertise, we have to get a license in every single state. And we have to keep up with it every year, What does that mean? Write a check.
Right.
And if you ever give up a license in any state, then the medical boards wonder, why'd you lose your license? Even though if you just said, you don't want to have it anymore.
I went through that with New York.
It is ridiculous to have 50 licenses in 50 states. There should be one license for doctors, whether it be MD, DO, nurse practitioners, PAs, etc. There should be one central system. That is a lot of regulation and red tape. It's money that is completely wasted every single year. I've got to keep 6 or 7 now active licenses in states, because once I get them, right, because I can do a lot of teaching.
Because you teach, and you also have a network, right, of med spas that's grown. So because of this,
I can't, even if I touch a patient trying to teach somebody, they will say that I'm practicing without a license.
Wow.
So I have to go around getting licenses simply to teach another doctor.
I was not aware you were doing that.
Simply to teach, yeah.
So perhaps you let the cat out of the bag, but I'm going to ask you, all our guests, and by the way, the last guest was an illustrious doctor, Senator Bill Cassidy, senator from Louisiana, one of three physicians. The other one everyone knows, Rand Paul. Right? And Barroso, who's gunning now for McConnell's job. He's an orthopedist from Wyoming. So there are three physicians. Last week, we had Bill Cassidy. And a lot of the things, because he was in the trenches. Mm-hmm. See, we need Congress to basically listen to this. and start enacting some legislation.
Wouldn't that be something?
So you're going to give me your three top initiatives that you think could help fix our broken system.
Well, I've already touched on a couple of them, so yep. I'll just recap yep. those. Just recap one in general is shrinking the gap. And I know that's a general thing, but it's shrinking the gap between the provider who diagnoses and treats disease and the patient. Where is all the money going? How do we just get directly from the patient paying for the product and service? There's a lot of things you can do. And one of the big things that I would do in that is in regards to access is nurse practitioners being allowed to do a lot more.
But our colleagues, right, physicians have to stop at the state level trying to lobby and buck against that. We have a shortage of physician folks. It's going to be 140,000 doctors, physicians shortage in the coming decade. Yes. 140,000. So let's stop fighting against our mid-level colleagues.
A lot of people have a simple urinary tract infection. They have a head cold. They don't need to go see a specialist for something like this. I tell you,
that's the same as what the term I use is minimize the middlemen. Mm-hmm. But I think I like your shrinking the gap between
the provider and the patient.
I like that. Okay, number two.
All right. The second one is, and this one's going to rile up a lot of attorneys. Okay. All right. There are so many frivolous lawsuits, and it makes your healthcare costs so expensive. So here's what you ought to do. There is no incentive out there for you not to get sued. Even if it's totally frivolous, and they know it's frivolous, they know you're willing and your insurance company's willing to settle anyway.
Right.
Right. Even if you did nothing wrong. So the ability in every single state to countersue for frivolous lawsuits, where you, if they clearly brought a case where you clearly did nothing wrong, there was no clear breach in standard of care, unequivocal, you can then countersue for a large sum.
That would open up a whole cottage industry of attorneys. So because the attorneys are worried about what these laws taking away from them, but you know, we have to think about the betterment of society, but now you're actually giving a lawyer more work.
Now an attorney has to go, well, before I sue this doctor who has a great reputation, did everything right, and sometimes you do everything right, and you still get a hematoma.
Nothing's 100%.
You still get a blood clot, no matter what you did. And they have to sit there and go, maybe we shouldn't sue because we could get countersued.
Right.
So
I love it. I've never heard it articulated. So you heard it here, folks. Well, I'll give you an example. I got into Silly Fenderman. And by the way, I will go public with this soon. Mm-hmm. I just found that the other day because my auto insurance let me know that the person who stopped and it was literally like boom, boom, boom and touched her. But because I have a plastic grill on my car, okay, I have a high deductible. But I just found out and I gave her my card. I said, call me. We'll just take care of this. Even though I really didn't do anything, she had to stop short. But guess what? I found out already. She went to a chiropractor. She started the game. So it's just a matter of time before I get the letter and she's in a cervical collar.
Oh my gosh.
Why? There's enough legitimate, injuries that happen where people do need representation and need to be compensated to not have the frivolous. I love that.
Yeah, she's probably there jumping rope right now.
But
when she sees every time.
I'm actually going to go public with this because I have a platform now. So if it really happens, I'm going to go public with it.
Yeah.
Somebody has to do it. I mean,
I think somebody has to do it. The attorneys need to have the fear that they better be bringing. I mean, look, some doctors need to be sued. They're out there.
Absolutely.
They're on drugs. They've got problems. They cause problems. Like, I absolutely believe.
That's another issue we didn't discuss. They get paid the same. If you are this level expertise, you do a ton of continuing education all the time. Mm-hmm. You teach, but you learn at the same time, right? All the time. There are people who just do what they did in a residency. And I'm not knocking that, but the insurance company pays or Medicare pays the same for the best cardiothoracic surgeon with the person. That's wrong. This is the only profession where everybody is. And then they use the word reimbursed.
Right.
I had a guy on his podcast that said, that's a ridiculous term. We're paid. Reimbursed. That means we put out money and now we're getting it back.
Right. Yeah. It also de-incentivizes excellence.
Right.
You want people to study. You want them to do a wonderful job. You want to have a better product. If you're all going to be treated the same,
Well, that's the point I've made right at the beginning, which is interesting with this particular podcast, Chad, is that in your field, it's different. Once, you're in New York, Fifth Avenue plastic surgeon with a great reputation, you know what those guys command for a facelift, right?
Sure.
But that same person who goes for a facelift, Medicare will pay for her hip replacement the same as anyone else. So that's, a lot of us surgeons have sort of plastic surgery envy because you can, and rightly so.
Yeah.
You charge based upon what your reputation, your skills are.
And then you have to also, you have to provide a great product. You've got to give great customer service. You got to make sure your front desk are very kind. Offer the patient, you know, with a coffee.
Right.
You because they're coming with their money, whether or not to your office or office A, B, C, D. This is just like any other product.
But it could be that way. I say this because we do that in my practice. Part of the reason is I'm out of network. And I hate to say, but I opted out of Medicare. I told you last summer.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been, 28 years. I think I've paid my dues, but I got to make a statement.
Sure.
And if enough physicians start doing that, guess what? You know, the AARP is going to get upset, and rightly so.
Yeah.
But there's a reason for these things. So, all right, number three.
Number three, and this is another one I was alluding to earlier, is remove the red tape for people to be able to practice medicine across the entire United States. It is absurd waste of time, regulation, employees that do nothing but stamp and check. This wasted jobs, wasted money. If you are a licensed physician in good standing in one state,
well, I'm gonna give a shout out
in all states
to one of our earlier guests was Dr. Leah Houston. Okay, she's back in LA. She was here in Miami. She's an ER physician. She started a company where she's going to use the blockchain to have all your credentials. Why is it that when you apply to a hospital or insurance company, it takes 4 to 6 months?
Oh, that's absurd. Yeah.
It should take seconds with AI.
Yeah.
And then you own your own credentials.
Yeah.
You own your own credentials. That's going to be, so that's a company to look out for. We'll see what happens. Leah Houston.
Yeah.
All right, so you get three. My three are easy. It's the same every week, folks. Mm-hmm. You're going to hear it. There's a lot of parallels. We need to have oversight, not authorization. That goes to your shrinking the gap. Why should somebody who doesn't have expertise in an area have to authorize me? In fact, I find it insulting. When my staff says, Dr. Padilla, we're waiting for authorization for that, rotator cuff repair. I'm like, authorized by somebody sitting at a desk
right.
who doesn't know? My internist doesn't. It's like me authorizing a retinal surgery.
It's absurd.
And I'm a physician. So but we need oversight because said there are bad apples.
There's
overutilizers, right? So we need oversight, but not authorization. Number two is right clinician at the right time. You save a lot of money. You do less tests. If you see the right person who has a clinical understanding of that and doesn't go ordering a million tests because they know patient walks in and in 5 minutes you have a great idea what the problem is because that's what you do.
And people practice defensive medicine. They want to order a million
tests. That's another,
You never get sued if you overtest somebody, but if you happen to not do something, then I might get sued. So you're just going to order everything.
I'm going to give a plug for my own book here. That's where the podcast came out of Healthcare for Matresses. And I'm waiting for your Amazon review.
There you go. All right. You got it, brother. You got it.
In there, I talk about the numbers of these overutilization of that and what it means economically to our healthcare system. So that's a great point. And the last one is this, what we are doing, what I know you do, is public education. We have to educate the public. We have to get them to that. I hate to use this analogy, but that sort of I can't breathe moment.
Sure.
Right? We have to, if we can move other social issues that are out there and get them front and center, why can't we do that with our healthcare system, which is now 20% of our GDP, twice as expensive as the next country.
You got to get people to care, and they do. But unfortunately, I think the attention span is so bad.
Yes.
I think you got to hit people. We're
trying to. I don't know we try to keep these under 20 minutes for that reason.
Yeah,
I'm hoping though, if any of you are listening to this, they'll share this. Don't thanks for liking it, but share it and say, hey, these two crazy guys that maybe have a good point here.
Yeah.
Right.
And it really takes, like you said, if the public knows when there is enough public sway and they see, wait a minute, you're telling me I can get actually better quality care and it can be affordable and it can be in the United States. I didn't realize.
And it can be pleasant and personable, like you say, what you have to do in cosmetic surgery. It should be that way in everything.
Yeah. And they had no clue. Just one little thing. I had no clue doctors had to get a license in 50 different states. Just one little thing that we talked about today. Right. If they only knew what we go through again from the trenches, like you say, then the awareness, they'd be screaming from the hilltops too.
All right. Well, that's a message. That was the last word. Thank you, Chad Deal.
You got
appreciate having you on. Thank you all. We'll see you in 2 weeks for another biweekly episode, Fixing Healthcare from the Trenches. And talk about this, folks. These are important issues. Thanks for your attention.